beautiful. And what I want to know is, what is really good in your life today? This is Kia, and this is the season 2 finale of the Female Veterans Podcast. And with me today, I am so excited, is one of my absolute favorite actresses. She is a shipmate of mine, not directly, but we both served in the Navy, so shipmates for sure. And she is currently appearing in Mysteries Decoded on the CW. She's been in Stranger Things, in CIS, and actually really, really a ton of stuff, you guys, since like 2005. Like, you have to go look at this woman. She is incredible. Not only that, she is an ambassador for Pinups for Vets, which you know is one of my very favorite organizations. And she's just all around generally cool and a kick-ass chick. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Jennifer Marshall.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. That's a glowing recommendation. Now I feel like I really have to live up to that. No pressure.
I'm sure you got this covered very easily. Okay. My first question for you is, what made you join the military?
I was living in a one-stop light town and I had to escape. And I just thought there has to be something else out there. But, you know, from the time I was a small child, I always just knew it was something that I wanted to do. I had 9 veterans in my immediate family and I would have been a 5th generation veteran. And it was just something always near and dear to my heart. So it was really a matter of which recruiter called me first. Good job, Navy.
Yeah. 5th generation veteran. That's incredible. That's a legacy.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, if one of my children decided to join, it would probably be my most proud moment. I won't push them into that, but it would really make me happy. So I have 4 children. We'll probably have one more. So the odds of of having another, you know, child join the military is much higher with 5 children as opposed to 1.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I think you got a shot.
I do too somewhere.
So as I always tell my kids, I'm like, if you're going to go in, consider going in through ROTC. I would have loved to have done that, but my recruiter was very persuasive about enlistment and the perks of it. And I actually enjoyed being enlisted. I had a great time.
I did too.
So tell me, what was boot camp like for you?
You know, boot camp was surprisingly less hard than what I thought it would be. I was an athlete. I played basketball. So physically it was not very taxing. And I'm a large woman. I'm almost 6 feet tall. So, yeah. So when we were, you know, after battle stations, we had to carry the sea bag full of wet clothing. I was one of the ones that carried it when we ran because it makes more sense for somebody, you know, at the time I was 170 pounds to carry it as opposed to somebody who's at barely 100 pounds. Mm-hmm. Now, that's at least 40, 50 pounds worth of wet swimwear. So, I found it physically not too demanding. But mentally, it was, it was a little bit of a struggle. I remember just not sleeping well and just trying to keep my eye on the prize. And there's a lot of mind games that go on, as you know. So that was a little bit of a struggle. But I think Navy boot camp prepare sailors very well for the fleet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did not get to see the fleet. So I was shore-based the entire time. I did not deploy.
Which is a sailor's dream. Everybody's like, wait, I wish I was you.
I know, but I wanted to see the world. And that was what sold me on the Navy, was going on the boat and going around the world and getting to see every port. So really, I mean, but I was a hospital corpsman. So I ended up in medical records and then I went to the pharmacy. I worked at the hospital. So it was really, really cool. But I was like, I saw Chicago and that's it.
Well, don't feel bad because Operation Iraqi Freedom, we were like, we're going to go on deployment. We're going to see everything. And then because it was wartime deployment, we were the first carrier group there. It was like, no, we saw 3 really quick ports and then we go home. So meanwhile, you know, a couple years prior, my friends were like, we had 9 port visits and we went all over the world. And here we were like, you know, a 3-day port visit and, you know, you have duty one of those days. You go in, you have fun. And then you get on the ship and then you lament your circumstances.
Well, it actually sounds more exciting than just day in and day out. Because for me, it was just like a job in a way. Like I lived in my apartment. I went to work. I didn't even wear my uniform to work. I put it on at work.
Right.
I went home. So it wasn't, I was almost like not having as full of a Navy experience as I think you could have.
Oh, I agree. I mean, my first 2.5 years, I was shore duty. And then after that, I remember I called the recruiter when I was up for orders. And I said, hey, I said, I just want to, I had a friend who was a second class and he was telling me about how he had spent Christmas in France. And he was like, you have to find a ship that's deploying. And I was like, oh yes, I'm going to spend Christmas in France. Like this will be amazing. You know, and I was all fancy and hoity-toity. And so I called the recruiter and I was like, I need a carrier that's deploying. I heard the Roosevelt's deploying. He's like, well, OPSEC, I can't tell you. And I was like, put me on the Roosevelt now. So I actually called him back a couple times and he was like, just keep calling back. I know a billet will pop up. So I ended up on the ship I wanted to be on, but I think he was like, who's this crazy lady calling me and asking for a ship, like demanding a ship? That generally people want shore duty, right?
Right. And you know what? That's pretty badass in my book. Like, I think that speaks to like your character and tenaciousness, which has probably helped you in your career.
I wanted to experience the fleet. All these people had told me, oh, you just wait till you get to the fleet. And I was like, well, I couldn't choose my first command. So I'm trying to get to the fleet. And I really wanted to experience, you know, what it was like. Cause I had so many shipmates who say, you'll never know until you're on a ship. So I said, well, let me do it now rather than later.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so what was that experience like once you got on a ship? Well, you said you were on shore duty and you had sea duty. So tell me about all of it. Like, what was it like for you?
So my first command, it was actually type 3 duty, which is kind of shore duty, but nobody would pick it. So they called it kind of neutral duty. So you could go to sea duty or shore duty after that. I was on a remote island off the coast of California and it was a missile test site. And so I was there for 2.5 years and, you know, there was only 40 military there, 200 civilians. It's very, very tiny. So that wasn't indicative of the Navy. So when I went to the USS Theodore Roosevelt, we deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. In 2003. We did some exercises before that. We were in and out doing JTFX and Comp2X. But that was really different being on a ship. And I loved being on a ship. And, you know, I'd say like, yes, it's dirty. Yes, it's stinky. Yes, it's, you know, there's not that much to do. But I just loved the fact that everybody came together for a cause. And we all said, let's just work our butts off to make this happen. And of course, years after the fact, I'm only going to remember the good things about deployment. Right. But you know, at the time I remember people saying like, this sucks so bad. And I was like, what, but really what sucks about it? I think it depends on your attitude and it depends on where you work on the ship. And I just saw it as, you know, I'm there to work and I worked 14, 16 hours a day, but I really liked it. I liked the teamwork and I liked the camaraderie and I miss that to this day. I miss it dearly. Nothing can replicate it.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I will say that like I was one of those people who were in a rush to get out of the military and start my civilian life, right? Mm-hmm. And then when I got out, I was like, why? Why aren't people as awesome as they are in the military? This is sucky. I don't like, you know, the corporate world and all of that. I'm like, you know, I miss that. People were so different and that camaraderie is just something you can't replicate. And that's why I do this, because getting to talk to you girls is amazing for me.
Yes.
It's like the highlight of my day.
Right. It is. It was a real letdown. And I try to explain to civilians, they're like, well, what did you like about it so much? And I said, you know, we could have half of the materials, half of the time, and we just made it happen. It's like the ultimate problem solving committee, you know, and we just made it happen, however it had to be. And I've really been disillusioned as a civilian, because I'll try to talk to people and it's not the same level of, you know, give a shit that there was when I was in. Like the shipmates I served with were really top notch. And I can't speak to today's military because I haven't been in the military for 15 years. But I know that when I was in, it was really good, solid people for the most part. And I do. I miss that. I miss service over self. And that's hard to find in the corporate world.
Absolutely. I'm still friends with almost everybody I served with. And if we come across each other on social media or in past, we just like just gel and connect and just share so much love together. And it's been years. It's just the most amazing community. And even more so, every time I meet a veteran, no matter when they served, we just have that instant connection and yes. we're just like family, like immediately. There's nothing like that. That is the best feeling.
Yes, I can meet with a vet who, you know, World War II Army guy, and we will still have something to talk about. And, you know, you had introduced me as an ambassador with Pinups for Vets. And I want to say that when we visit veterans, some of my favorite veterans to meet with in the hospital or the nursing homes are the older female veterans. So Korea, Vietnam era, you know, World War II nurses and WASPs and WAVES. These women paved the way for women like us to serve. And I'm just so appreciative of that. But that is something, that's why I'm married to a veteran. That's why my best friends are vets, because there's a shared bond there that I don't have with other people. As much as I've tried to kind of implement that, it just hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm. I can feel that totally. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Tell me a little bit about what was your day-to-day like on a ship? Cause you know, I wasn't on one. So I'm super curious how you, what was your day like?
So I'll say this, and everyone who's been on a ship will be like nodding vociferously. So I was on a carrier. So there's 5,000 to 5,500 when you're deployed. That's with the air wing. But for some reason, depending on where your office is, where your work center is, you will see the same like 50 to 100 people. And towards the end of deployment, you're like, these are the same ugly MFs I see every single day. Cause you're like sick of people. And listen, I add an ugly MF face to other people, I'm sure too, but you're just like, why am I seeing this person? And you see the same people, and then you'll pull into port. And you know, I worked in aviation, so I would see somebody from engineering and I'd be like, oh cool, what battle group are you with? And they're like, your battle group. And I was like, oh cool, what ship? And they're like, the Roosevelt. And I'm like, but I'm on the Roosevelt, and we've never seen each other.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy, because I remember talking to, I had seen this guy that I thought was really cute, and I was talking to him, and I was like, hey, and I was like, what do you do? He's like, I'm a senior chief. And I was like, ooh, well, that's kind of okay, but we're on different boats, so that's okay. And I started talking to him, and he's like, I'm on the Roosevelt. And then I was like, I'm on the Roosevelt. And immediately it was like, stop, because we had never seen each other. No, he works in engineering. I worked in aviation, but you know, you see the same people all the time and it's the same routine. It's very much like Groundhog Day. So that was kind of rough. And then, you know, when we wouldn't get mail call for a long time, because back then not everybody had access to the internet. We didn't have smartphones. So when we didn't have mail call, it would be kind of, and also I'll tell you, so we get unreps and vert reps, underway replenishments and vertical replenishments for like food, mail, whatever. So we wouldn't have one for a while and we would run out of certain kinds of food. So you would go down to the mess decks and all the cereal that would be left would be like Total and Wheaties and grape nuts and like All Brand and like gross shit nobody eats. And so I remember I would go down and I would straight up like fill my shirt with Cinnamon Toast Crunch for my work center. So I would be running like down the P-way with like these boxes of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So it looks like I had like box boobs, but no like senior enlisted leader is going to be like, excuse me, what's in your bra? So you're like good to go. So I would like take it back to the work center and I distribute it. I'd be like, I take care of all you guys. Like I got you because you're so desperate for something else rather than just All Brand. Like who wants to eat All Brand for breakfast?
Right, every day.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is the best story.
Everyone who's been on deployment is like, yes, screw the All Brand.
Right? Oh my goodness. That is hilarious.
Yeah.
So, okay. So your day to day was pretty much like just the same faces and, oh wait, I have a question about your job and at aviation. What was that like?
So I worked as an aviation storekeeper. So when the mechanics and the technicians needed something to fix the airplane, they would come and say, hey, this is what I need. And it was a really great job for me because I have always been a wheel and a dealer and, you know, I'll take care of you. You take care of me. I will go out on a limb to help whoever. So, you know, I had contacts back in Norfolk. I had contacts at squadrons. And so we would run into a predicament where they'd say, we need this piece. We can't find this piece. And, you know, I was able to locate it wherever it's at. And I read a book by Malcolm Gladwell Gladwell. Well, I love all of Malcolm Gladwell's books.
He's amazing.
He's amazing. But he talks about like the mavens of the world that connect everybody. And that's the thing is I wasn't necessarily really good in anything that I did or really proficient, but I knew a lot of people. And that's really the key. Like when you need a part, you're not just cold calling, you're actually building relationships and checking in with people. And so I liked that. And I also liked being the person that people could rely on if they needed something. You know, if they came to me with a problem, they knew I wouldn't blow them off. I would take it seriously and try to be the answer to their problem. So I enjoyed what I did. Sometimes I didn't feel intellectually stimulated by it, but mm-hmm. I enjoyed helping people and being an integral part of the mission.
I can see it. I could see you because, you know, having served, and the jobs that I did, I get that vibe, like helping others and building those relationships mm-hmm. in order to get the job done and making those connections all throughout the hospital is mm-hmm. something that I did. So like, I totally can see how you were working angles and getting things done. But at the same time, making all these great connections and even friendships mm-hmm. all across, you know, the ship and getting the mission accomplished, which is one of my favorite things about serving is becoming so mission accomplished oriented.
Yes. Yes, for sure. I'm definitely a people person and that was a good job to have. Being a people person. I'm glad I wasn't, you know, a technician or something because I that's not how I'm wired. But having the job that I had, it was great. It was really great.
So how did you choose that job?
I actually came in to be a corpsman, but it was closed to women. They had their number of billets for the year. And so but I needed to leave. I was no longer living at home with my parents. I had to get out. I thought if I put this off, there's a good chance I was just paranoid that something would happen to where I would not enlist. And so I said, I just have to go. So I went in undesignated. And then my first year, I was working as an aircraft handler at my first command. And I liked, one of my friends was working in supply and she pretty much ran the show. Like her LPO was kind of retiring, like at his last command, he was kind of just chilling. And, you know, she was taking advantage of that and kind of just chilling. And I was like, no, you could do all this amazing stuff. Like you're basically your own boss as an E4.
Yeah.
So I knew she was leaving. So I took the test for aviation storekeeper. And then I went over to do the supply warehouse. And so basically because my LPO was kind of retiring in place, he was like, do whatever you want. I'm going to go drink coffee and hang out. We had like a bowling alley on the island. So he's like, I'm going to go hang out at the bowling alley. And so he was basically never around, but I didn't care. I was like, all right, well, let me do some stuff. And it was really great. And I did a lot. I left that command with a Navy Achievement Medal, which at the time, those were not easy to get. So I was very appreciative that they appreciated my hard work. I was able to clean out the entire supply warehouse and we came across stuff from World War II. That's how long it had been in there.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, there was mop gear from World War II. We found a machete. We found all sorts of crazy stuff. This should be a show.
That's incredible. Yeah. And you're finding all like just old relics.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a good show.
Yeah. It felt like Storage Wars. If you've ever seen that show, but nobody was bidding on the stuff. We were just pulling it out. Like, where does this come from?
That's hilarious. Yeah. So, okay. So once you were on the ship, how long were you on the ship for?
2.5 years.
And then did you get out or did you reenlist? How did that work for you?
No, I got out. When we were deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom, we had to get smallpox vaccine and we had to get anthrax vaccinations. And
yeah,
there, you know, I don't believe that they knew that there was a downside to the vaccinations. I can't say, you know, it was a government conspiracy. I mean, who knows with the Tuskegee, who knows, right?
You don't know.
I don't know. I'm going to hope that it was just a bad reaction I had to them. But the first shot that I got, I thought I had the flu. The second shot, I was like, maybe this is mono. The third shot, I thought there's something seriously wrong. And I was supposed to get 6 shots. And by the 6th shot, I went in and I said, please just let me talk to the senior medical officer. And he looked at my record and he was like, wait, she had never really been to medical prior to getting these shots. And now she's in medical, you know, twice a week, like she's really mm-hmm. sick. So he signed off. I didn't get them, but I didn't get the last shot. But by that time I had orders to my next command, and I actually had to call my next command and say, I'm so sorry. I have to get out. I'm very ill. And I was sick for probably about 2 years. I was really, really sick. And the VA, the Navy was like, oh, it's not the anthrax shots. And then the VA was like, oh, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Sorry.
Thank God they said yes to that.
They did. They, you know, they acknowledged that. And they rated me for that, but that's not what I wanted. I didn't want a rating. I didn't want to get out. Mm-hmm. I wanted to stay in. I wanted to be I was like, someday I'm going to be the CNO and my best friend's going to be my MCPON. And
you know, oh, it's so cute.
Stupid, like, thoughts when Aww. We were 18, like, we're going to run the Navy. Like, girls are going to run the Navy.
Girl, who rules the world? Girls.
Right? We run the world. So I was really disappointed when I had to get out. You know, it was traumatic for me. It was, because I loved the Navy. I did. Yeah.
I can imagine how, yeah, I'm the opposite of that. And so when I was in, we had to go and have everyone on the base had to go into the base movie theater mm-hmm. And watch a movie about the anthrax vaccinations. And I was like, oh my God, I'm about to become a conscientious objector. Like, I was very freaked out. Like, I was like, I can't take that
but
shot.
At
like,
least- You got to watch a movie. I didn't even watch a movie, and they put
didn't
it in
give
my
you
body.
Any information?
No, we watched no movie. And I remember being on the mess decks in these long lines, and there was a headline from the Air Force Times, I think, with some guy who sued because he said, I'm not going to take these shots, or he took the shots and he mm-hmm. got sick. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, oh yeah, like this guy got sick. I remember kind of like mocking in a way, like, mm-hmm. okay, I bet you were the only one, like, okay, buddy. And then I ended up getting sick, and I was like, this is karma.
Oh no.
We never watched a movie though.
Yeah, the whole base had to go. And well, you know, I served in the 90s. So this mm-hmm. was like just, we knew what something was brewing mm-hmm. over there. Mm-hmm. And I served in the late 90s. And so we knew something we were on because I was stationed at Great Lakes. And it was then the only boot camp and training command. Right. They mm-hmm. had shut down all the other training commands. And so we were on high alert years before anything ever happened. So mm-hmm. probably about 2 years, I got out in 99. So probably like maybe 2 years before that, okay. they had us all, the whole base had to go in like shifts to the base theater and watch this information, like this, I don't know, propaganda, a movie. I don't know what you want to call it, but we'd have to watch this about the anthrax vaccine and that we were going to have to get it for when we deployed. Right. And I was thinking to myself, I can remember as clear as yesterday going, I don't want that shot. That is scary. Like, I don't want that shot. And then I remember a couple years later, I think it was after I got out, I read an article about the fact that they had gotten the anthrax, from the organization that they had acquired it from was no longer in business. And
that's,
I was like,
a good sign.
Right. And I was like, oh my God, I hope they're not. And I was out by this time. And I was like, I hope they're not giving those shots to people. This would have been right around the time that you got your shot is when I saw this article. So I'm not really that, like, I'm not going to go, it's a conspiracy right, or anything right. like that, but I'm just going to say that my heart goes out to you for getting sick for that. And that derailing your dream of a career, because it's sad.
You know, what's interesting was so for one episode of my show, we went up to interview, people at a Naval Surface Warfare Center up in Maryland. And I was speaking to one of the women up there. She's a retired captain. And she told me she was a captain when she got the anthrax shots. And she got the same sort of pushback from her chain of command. She got sick and she had admirals. So I had people saying, well, what's wrong with you? She, as a captain, had mm-hmm. admirals saying, oh, are you a malingerer? Are mm-hmm. you just pretending you're sick? And I was like, even right. a captain has to put up with this.
Yes.
So she ended up getting really sick and having residual health problems too. So, you know, if you look at this and you look at how many people got sick from it, you can't just say, oh, it was a coincidence, or, you know, the fact is it just wasn't tested appropriately. And mm-hmm. I get it. We're guinea pigs for the United States military. And that's, you know, something that we signed up.
Yes. We gave away our human rights.
Yes.
We volunteered to become government property.
Right. But I just feel like, yikes, could we maybe do some sort of research prior to pumping this into bodies? I don't know.
I'm going to go with you on that.
Yeah. Troops are expensive. We're expensive to train. We're not disposable. Come on now.
Or shouldn't be. And that being like, you lose a lot of really good, really motivated, really dedicated people when they get sick. I got sick. I don't know if you know this, but I left the military sick. I acquired, I don't know how, some illnesses that resulted in me having fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and Epstein-Barr virus. And it changed my life. It changed the entire trajectory of my future. And I'm rated for it now, but it took me a 10-year fight to get that rating and going before a judge and like, and I represented myself. So I became a lawyer for like 10 years and fought this case until I finally won. And I definitely understand coming out and being young and being sick and how traumatic that is and trying to recreate your life when you have to also battle illnesses people can't see and also think that you're a malingerer.
Yes. And they actually rated me with fibromyalgia. And I said, listen, I appreciate that you're trying to rate me with something, but I don't believe that that's what it is. I'm sick from the shots. I was never sick prior to that. I was a long distance runner and a basketball player. So I really need you guys to like look into this. Sure, rate me for whatever you need to rate me, because at the time they didn't have somewhere on the sheet where you could put I'm sick as a result of this. Now they do. So we've made some sort of, you know, we've now they at least recognize it. Yes, you can get sick from the other shots. But when I was in, they were like, yes, we know that this did this to you, but we don't recognize that. We just recognize whatever label we want to put on you. So that's another fight that I'm having with the VA right now is let's not just rate me to rate me. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in discovering what this actually was that I'm sick from. And, you know, if you have to run tests, if you have to do whatever it is to help my brothers and sisters who may have the same issue, please do that, because now I'm better. And if I had fibromyalgia, I wouldn't be better.
That's right.
So it's clearly not that. And I had a rheumatologist with 45 years experience who is a former Navy doctor turned private practice, who said to me, there's no way that this is fibromyalgia. There's no signs or symptoms. It was just a diagnosis that they put on you. So to me, I want them to diagnose correctly, because that's not helping our community if it's just diagnosing whatever and just slapping something on it.
Oh my God. Amen to that. Because ironically enough, I went through that too, where they, instead of diagnosing me with chronic fatigue, which is what it is, they decided, or was it Epstein-Barr? I think it was Epstein-Barr. They decided that it was avitaminosis, which is something I don't have, and then denied my claim based on me not having symptoms of something I don't have. So that was a whole, So that was a whole fight in and of itself, which was finally rectified in the courtroom. But, but yeah, I totally get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. I wish I just had a time machine. I could go back. And if I never got those shots, I mean, who knows? I have friends now who are retiring as master chiefs, or now they're lieutenant commanders. And in another, I always say in a parallel universe, Master Chief Marshall is a CMC somewhere. I don't know.
She probably is, girl.
That's right.
She probably is.
I just want her life for one day just to see what it's like.
Well, I just read this thing about quantum jumping, so perhaps you can.
I need to look into this, because I have serious FOMO. I have fear of missing out in my military career that no longer exists.
You know, I often wonder too, like if I had just been a little bit less of a hippie and so gung-ho about going to college, if I had just stayed in, what? Because my friends are retiring, right? And I'm like, wow. And I actually interviewed a shipmate of mine who was stationed with me, and Mindy, and she's incredible also. And she retired. And it was so interesting to me to find that her struggle getting out of the military was in reinventing herself as a civilian. So like, this is why I always say every story is so important, because she had a great time in, although she didn't get to deploy, so that made advancing rough for her.
Yeah.
But she did retire as a chief, And she had an amazing career and then got out and was like, oh my God, who am I? where are my people? I'm in a new city. Usually if I go to a new city, I have this ready-made family because I'm on the base, right?
Yeah.
But now I'm in a new city and my husband's in, and I am now a civilian wife, a dependent wife. And I don't know who I am anymore because my identity was so closely wrapped up in serving. And it's just, it's a powerful story, you know, because she details really well what she went through to try to reinvent herself and find herself. Yes. So, yeah, it's just a beautiful story. And that is like one of those things where everybody's story is powerful. Mm-hmm. You never know. And so I wonder sometimes what would have happened if I stayed in.
Yeah. But I think that's a really valid point is, you know, when you're in the military, you always have a community that you can kind of rely on. And then once you're not anymore, it is absolutely and totally understandable to feel lost. That happens. No one should look down on themselves and say, oh, why do I feel this way? You feel this way because we've had a built-in family for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and suddenly you don't. And that's okay to feel that way and deal with those emotions.
I love that you said that because it's so, so true. And there's so much power in just finding that community of veterans and then finding your way to reinventing yourself and coming through those obstacles of the transition. Because one of the reasons why I'm on this journey is because I myself had a difficult transition, and the veterans I've been helping. So what helped me begin to heal is that many years ago, once I got on my feet, I started helping other veterans just on a regular basis, like, here, let me help you fill out for your disability. Here, do you know how to get your medical benefits? Are you taking your meds? Take your meds, I just would come across, veterans would pop into my path and I would just end up helping them. And that's continued my whole life. And this is an extension of that. And I think that it's one of those things that in the transition can really help you. And as through talking to them, I found that so many of us have difficulties transitioning out.
We do. I mean, think about it. We have 5 to 10 days of transition assistance program, but we have 2 to 3 months to become a soldier, sailor, marine, airman, or Coast Guardsman. And then people say, well, you know, I shouldn't have this many problems transitioning. Well, of course, maybe if we had 2 to 3 months of transition assistance, that's different. And for many of us, we came in, maybe some people had no job before. Maybe some people had one job. You know, most people are coming in as teenagers, you know, fresh out of your parents' house. So no, some people get out, they've never paid rent. They've never paid anything. And to try to make that transition all at once, it can be overwhelming and daunting and just a difficult transition.
And then you have people who come out with like MST or PTSD who have these trauma based issues, and they're really at a loss because, and that's how you end up with so many of us on the streets, which is what I'm really passionate about resolving. And so it's just, it is such an important thing. I love that you said we should have 3 months, 2 to 3 months of transition. Because I've been thinking, like, what could make a difference? And I think you're onto something with that.
Yeah.
Like, I think you should have as much time to transition out and to be prepared for it as you did to become a soldier or sailor or airman or marine or coastie.
I'll say there's a program that I'm working with now called American Corporate Partnership. It's www.acp-usa.org. This program provides veterans with mentors in the field. So I'm mentoring an actor who wants to get into the business. He was former Army, and that is really helping with his transition because he doesn't have to go through all the pitfalls that I did in my career. And, you know, I'd say about 25% of the mentors are veterans. All of the mentees are veterans. 75% are civilians. So if somebody's listening and they're one in a position to mentor, contact them, or two, if they're in a position where they want to be mentored, contact them, because they put you with somebody who is kind of, you know, at an intermediate to advanced level in their field. And it's just so helpful. And that's what we have to do, because most veterans, they don't need a hand out. We just need a hand up. So if you can help a veteran, or you can, you know, reach out and be helped by this program, like, please, please do so.
That's beautiful. And so as you all know, that I will link it in the show notes so that you can find it. And so, okay, So we talked about your illness and how it forced you out of the military pretty much against your will.
Yes.
How did you overcome those obstacles to, because you have a really successful career right now. And how did you get through that illness and start working towards that?
Well, it's funny because we think we know what's best for us. And, you know, I don't know people's religious beliefs, but I definitely thought, okay, well, I think I know best. And honestly, God knows best, because everything that I tried to do, it wasn't what was going to happen. If you would have told me 15 years ago, you'll be on Netflix's number one show and you'll have your own show on the CW, I would have laughed my ass off. There is no way. Because I just couldn't see past what was in front of me and I was so sick. So I got into acting kind of just in a weird way. I had a friend who, he was on a local commercial and he was a retired chief. And I said, hey, how did you do that? And he said, oh, I take classes at this local acting studio. And so I started taking classes there and I booked my first job 2 weeks in.
Wow.
So yeah, it was very quick. And I started doing local commercials and I started doing some non-union TV shows. And then it got to the point where in 2009, I had kind of saturated the market in Norfolk, Virginia. There wasn't really anything left for me to work on because it's a very small TV and film market. So 2 years later, when my husband retired, I relocated to Los Angeles. And it's just always been something where, you know, I was able to, I'm emotionally available. So I pulled from the experiences I had in the military and I use those in my auditions. And I think as vets, some of us are emotionally cut off and emotionally unavailable, mm-hmm. but I did a lot of that in the military. And I told myself once I got out, I was going to be really truthful to who I was as a person and not try to bury my feelings. And so that's been very beneficial to me, you know, and I've ended up playing a lot of veteran and military roles. And I think it's because, you know, casting realizes that I'm not acting. They know that I'm pulling from my own experience and my goal is to represent the active duty and veteran community well on screen. Because to me, when I put on a uniform, it's not a costume. It means something.
My God, that's so beautiful. I just love everything you said. I'm glad I'm recording this. I'm going to listen to that again. Okay. So speaking of playing military, as a gamer,
yeah,
I'm so excited to have found that you are going to be playing military.
Yes,
in Squadron 42, the video game.
It was funny because that particular casting was covered by a show called Cast Me. The casting director for that project is a former Marine and he now works in Hollywood, David King. He's a casting director. And so he brought me in and the role was for Petty Officer Tyler Ford and she's a mechanic. I was like, wait. So I straight up wore my Navy coveralls and I, you know, it's not... It's kind of like a futuristic military that doesn't exist. So mm-hmm. I didn't follow like grooming standards or anything. I think I did like two pigtails and I did my nerdy glasses. And I really just tried to make a character for this mechanic. And I went in and I was up, you know, against, they had 4,000 submissions. They had a couple hundred people audition. And then it came down to the three of us. And one of the girls that I was up against, Natasha, she's a very, very talented actress. And I just thought, gosh, I would probably cast Natasha if that was me. Mm-hmm. She was just so good. I was such a fan of hers. And I ended up booking it and I flew out to London. They flew me out to London and I shot. And there, you know, Mark Hamill's in it, Gillian Anderson, Liam, gosh, what's Liam's last name? He plays Ser Davos on Liam Cunningham on Game of Thrones. So I was literally shooting this like, all these people like are amazing and who am I and what am I doing here? And did they make a mistake? And
oh no, so you totally had imposter syndrome.
Oh, I did. I was like, they're going to realize that I'm not on the level of these people and be like, excuse me, Miss Marshall, you need to leave.
Oh no, but guess what? You're out of all of those people, the one with petty officer experience.
Yes. Yeah. So it was interesting and I'll be happy to see it come out. It's a very intricate game, but they, you know, they made the character based off me. I had dots all over my face. I took pictures. So her Tyler Ford is going to have Jennifer Marshall's face, which is hilarious and frightening.
I think that's so awesome. I'm going to go and buy that game just because you're in it.
Thank you.
But as a side note, I do like gaming. So
thank you. Well, it's supposed to be out next year. We actually shot it in 2015 and, It's an intricate game. It's part of Star Citizen universe. And, you know, those games take a long time to develop. So, it's a long wait, but it'll be great when it finally comes out.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations on that. It's really cool. So, let's talk more about your acting. So you said how you got involved, but how did it really bloom for you? Was there something that you, like an aha moment or a turning point where you were like, this is really what I'm going to do and I'm going all in on it?
There's been a couple times, like in an actor's career, you have milestones that you hit and then you're like, okay, I'm on the right path. So I had booked there was a non-union recreation show in Virginia, and the woman was married to a man who had killed police officers. He had beat her. He had raped her. He had beat their children, their child. And so she did not want to come on and be interviewed, which I totally understand, because at the time he was still alive. And so they were able to cast whoever. They didn't have to match anybody. Normally recreation shows, they match people. So they brought in a couple dozen actresses to audition, and I ended up booking that. And to me, that meant a lot, because it was only based off of acting ability. It wasn't based off of anything else. They had to match. So for me, that was great. It was a really good show. We shot it. You know, I got a lot of feedback on it. It still airs to this day. It's an episode of FBI Criminal Pursuit. And then when I moved out to Los Angeles, my first SAG gig in the union was a small role on General Hospital, which the casting director for that, Mark Tetchner, is an amazing, wonderful, humble man, and I love him dearly. And then I had booked my first co-star on a regular show, which was Colony on USA. So there's these things that we hit as actors where we say, okay. And then, of course, when I booked Stranger Things, that was surreal and amazing and crazy. And so, yeah, you hit these things where you think, you never think, oh, I've got this in the bag. I mean, unless you're a narcissist, you don't really think right. that. Because acting is feast or famine. You know, sometimes you can have a bunch of auditions and nothing will pan out. And I don't know, when I booked NCIS, I thought that was a pretty poor audition. I cursed in it. I forgot my line. I was angry. And, I called
like,
my agent.
Yes, her.
Oh, it was horrible. And I called my agent and he goes, how did that go? And I said, yeah, just don't hold your breath. And then they called and said, you know, we want to book her. And I was like, what? Did you see the same audition I had? So you just never know. It's very weird. It's a weird process.
Well, I'm glad to see that you are so, so successful, especially representing for us veterans out there. And Hollywood is a hard town. And so it seems that you've kind of cracked the code a bit and you're just making, you know, waves and doing wonderful things and representing us so well.
Thank you. It's hard. It's a very fine line I have to straddle, because I never want to tell casting or production how to do their jobs. That's not my place, but I definitely do try to get them to see that there's an inherent benefit in hiring an actor who happened to have served. I don't tell them we're veterans trying to be actors. No, we're actors who happen to have served our country. And there is a benefit, because, you know, it takes 2 to 3 months for us to make that transformation. If you're trying to teach an actor, it's kind of a hard, you know, it's a hard process. And to me, I want to represent our community well, and I want to represent our community accurately. So the directors I've worked with have been wonderful and amazing and allowed me to do that. And that's important, because if veterans are not involved, then what? Then it's just, you know, this negative narrative that we're all ready to go postal. We all have post-traumatic stress. We all have all these things. And it's just, it's inaccurate at best, insulting at worst.
I agree with that 100%. I mean, definitely there was a time in my life where it wasn't a benefit to have my military experience on my resume. Yes. And I think that has a lot to do with, like, sort of the affirmative action they do for veterans. And then people go, well, I wanted to hire this person, but I have to hire a vet. Instead of thinking, like, there are thousands of very qualified veterans that you could hire for this position, instead of just taking one that just to have a veteran body in there.
Right.
It sort of makes a negative perspective towards veterans and hiring them. And for a long time, I had to fight against that in my career. And so I can definitely understand why it's important for you to show who we really are.
It's very important. And, you know, I won't get too much into politics, but I will say that there's kind of this thought process that all veterans are, you know, very right wing and Hollywood is very left wing. So, and actually veterans here, we run the spectrum, conservative, libertarian, liberal, but it does us a disservice when the thought is we're all right wing, because then people are less likely to bring us in. And I try to explain to them, you know, generally, you know, veterans, they don't talk politics on set. They go on, they do what they're supposed to do, and they go home. And as long as no one's talking politics on set, there shouldn't be any stigma against that. And the assumption shouldn't be made that all veterans are right wing, especially veterans who are actors. They tend to be a little more, you know, artsy fartsy types. And so I always tell them, you know, just because somebody is a veteran, that does not in Hollywood, that doesn't mean you can ascertain their political status, nor should you try to, because it has nothing to do with anything. As long as somebody goes on set and they perform, then that's, you know, all that needs to happen. And I just don't want that unfair judgment put out there.
Yeah, that's really important. I do. I'm old school. I'm like, let's not talk politics. Let's just like leave it where it needs to be and do our job. Right?
I judge people on their own individual merits. And, you know, one of my friends who's she's an Army vet, and we are on polar opposite sides of the spectrum as far as politics. And we're going to Cambodia in January. And I don't judge her because of her politics. I love her for who she is as a person. And there's things that we just agree to disagree on, but we have conversations and we hear each other out, and that's how it should be. So when people come at me and say, you know, you shouldn't think this, you shouldn't think that, I say, listen, as a veteran, I think everybody's entitled to their political opinion, and we really should look a little deeper and not be so quick to just demonize the other side.
I love that you mentioned that, because that is almost identical to the way I believe. I just feel like you don't have to agree on anything to treat each other with respect and kindness and love.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
To just be a good person and treat a person with the dignity and respect that they deserve. You don't have to agree on one single thing.
No.
It has nothing to do with that. It depends on who you are as a person. And so I don't judge people on their political beliefs at all.
Compassion costs me nothing.
Right?
No.
Right? So, I mean, I agree with that. Just in life in general, I have friends that are on both sides. And and I think it is important to be able to talk about these things and to express your differences and agree to disagree. Right. And definitely, I could see where in Hollywood, as being like known as a liberal place, how it could be hard to be perceived, you know, as a veteran coming in and then having people sort of get preconceived notions about you for that. That makes me a little bit sad.
Yeah, because there's not preconceived notions about any other group. If you come in and you say, oh, I'm a barista, they don't say, oh, all baristas, you know, are ABC. Right. But with vets, there is kind of, you know, that preconception, and there just really shouldn't be, because we're all different, and we should all be judged accordingly on our own merits. So thankfully we have a lot of vets who are just booking and doing really well and just kind of forging ahead. And that's good. I always say when one vet books, it's a win for our community. So if somebody books, I'm never like, eh, they booked. I'm like, oh my gosh, you booked. That's freaking amazing. I'm so happy for you. It really is. Just awesome, awesome, awesome to have that representation, that accurate representation on screen.
So that's amazing. I love that so much, and that you're just sort of breaking down doors and breaking
trying.
Out like, the stereotype there
trying.
In Hollywood. Look at you. still serving and giving back to the veteran community, which I know you love to do.
I do.
So let's talk about pinups for vets.
Yes.
One of my favorite topics, because I love Gina. Shout out to Gina. She's amazing.
She's wonderful. She's wonderful.
And you do really incredible work as an ambassador visiting hospitals for the sick and senior who just love, you know, that image of the pinup of the bygone era of World War II. And it just probably fills them with so much joy that it just makes my heart burst. So tell us all about that.
It fills my heart with joy too. It really does. You know, when we go in, it's mainly female veterans. We have some spouses. We have some very enthusiastic civilian supporters, but for the most part, it's mainly female veterans. We go in, we dress very modest, but we're very colorful in our attire. So we go in, you know, we meet with the vets, at hospitals or nursing homes, and it is just so nice to sit and share stories. And I think that, you know, with the movement to be more politically correct, you know, our organization is one where people have said, well, wait, you know, it's girls dressing up. Maybe that's not appropriate. Once they do any sort of research into our organization, they realize that it's not about showing skin. It's not about any of that. These are not just pretty girls walking into a room. You know, these are veterans sharing stories and hugs and having an ear. And I remember one time we went to a nursing home, and it was about 2.5 years ago. And I sat down and I started talking to a woman who served during Korea. And she told me after, you know, 15 minute long conversation about a sexual assault that she had endured. And she said, you know, I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I've never told anybody. And just talking to her and being there for her, I realized maybe if we hadn't come that day, maybe it never would have came out. And she was really, it was like a weight was lifted off her shoulders to talk to another woman who understood what she had gone through. And it's those sort of things, you know, when, you know, the snap judgments are made about organizations about, you know, oh, you know, they're doing A, B, and C. No, listen to the stories that we have, because there's so many stories where we've gone in and it's made such a difference. And some of these veterans, they don't have visitors that day, that week, that month, sometimes ever. Mm-hmm. And it's important that their service, that they don't feel like their service was in vain or that they've been forgotten. And that's why I'm so passionate about the organization. It's meaningful work.
I feel that. Mm-hmm. I absolutely feel that. So I'm going to tell you a little story. Mm-hmm. And before I do, I'm going to say, I love that you shared that she told you that story, because the experience you have is what I have on the mm-hmm. Female Veterans Podcast. It is mm-hmm. why I do what I do, why I'm so passionate about it, because right. you probably healed her in some way that day just by being there and by hearing her story and her finding her voice to share it. And that is so beautiful to me. It's just, it's emotional. And so I'm going to share a story about my training. And I was, as a hospital corpsman, I had to do, at the end of my A school training, some time in the hospital at the VA. Mm-hmm. And where I was at was the senior ward. Okay. And, as a 19-year-old girl, it changed my life, because mm-hmm. every day I spent doing what you ambassadors do, talking right. to seniors, sharing time with them, hearing their stories, taking care of them, because it was like being a nurse's aide, right? Uh-huh. And, I had, a patient called Mr. McNamee. And when I arrived there, he had pictures of his family all over his walls, and he was a lucky one. He had someone that would come see him. But a lot of these people, these admirals and chiefs and like all these amazing military veterans in this sort of nursing home style facility on the ward, they didn't have people coming to see them. Mm-hmm. And we were like seeing us young girls, even in our uniforms, not even as pinups, were like the highlight of their day. There was nothing inappropriate, but it was young youthfulness and conversation and a smile and us being idealists and young and just all of that. And so I would go and see Mr. McNamee every single day. When I arrived there, he was covered in bed sores mm-hmm. and his nurse was completely desensitized to his pain and just. So I said, please, like I had to stop her from caring for him right. and took over and started helping him heal those sores. And so I left for a weekend, right? And this was after a period of a couple of weeks. And when I came back, his room was being cleaned out because he passed away, which was like devastating for me. Yeah. You can imagine, because I would sit and talk to him and hold his hand, and he could hardly talk, but he would write and he would say, thank you so much for taking care of me. Mm-hmm. And his kids came that day, and his son said to me, thank you so much for taking care of my father. Mm-hmm. He said, he was so happy to see you every day. No one gave him that kind of care and compassion. Right. Well, and we couldn't be here. So thank you so much. He talked about you all the time. And it was like life changing for me. Of course, I was devastated and it was very hard. I'm still sad about that. Yeah. But it was so important to me to do that. And so that's why I connect to Pinups for Vets and what you do. And I read an article, I actually saw on Instagram that a few weeks ago, the girls were turned away. And it just broke my heart. I was outraged because I'm like, these people might not see anybody. Right. And it's important work. So that's my point.
We, oh my gosh, that's such a touching story. Thank you for sharing that. Yes, it's important. And a few weeks ago, we were told by the San Diego VA that we could not visit. And, you know, we bucked up against that and said, no, the work that we do is important. And they came back and said, we need to pre-screen your outfits before you come.
Oh my God.
And this is why this is insane. First of all, as a female veteran, no one is going to tell me how to dress. Second of all, we have on more clothes than many visitors who are coming, than, you know, than veterans who are coming for their appointments. The only difference is we have a hair flower and red lipstick. Mm-hmm. They said that, you know, our visit could perpetuate sexual harassment. There has been only one time in dozens of visits that I've done where anything remotely, you know, inappropriate has happened. It was a man who had Alzheimer's. One time, and I visited thousands of veterans at their bedside. You can't say, okay, just in case this might happen. I am far more offended when I go into a VA for treatment and they ask me who my sponsor is or where my sponsor is. Why not just to make the assumption that every woman is a veteran? And if she's not, she'll correct you. So for them to say, oh, in case this might happen, or, you know, we really haven't done any sort of research on the organization, but we think it's this. No, do the research, because at the end of the day, it's about veterans connecting with other veterans and veterans being there for their brothers and sisters in need. But I think we live in a society where it's a very knee-jerk sort of reaction. And that's why I always try to do research on something prior to making a decision, because that is only hurting the veterans at that facility if we're not able to visit. And it's hurting us too, because I need that interaction with vets to make me feel good. I need to give back. And when we aren't allowed to visit, that hurts the volunteers as well. We need each other. Yeah. And they're keeping us from other, they're keeping veterans from being together. And I just, I don't understand it. I don't.
I'll never understand it. I tweeted about it. I was outraged. I couldn't understand it. And I hope that it won't happen again, because I really believe that these people, this is just like a little slice of heaven for them that they deserve. Mm-hmm. They've served and they shouldn't be forgotten. So hopefully
no.
And we
actually have a few male ambassadors that come with us. It tends to be women, because I just think women do more charity work overall. Mm-hmm. But we have a few male ambassadors who come with us. We've had male ambassadors in the calendar. My son comes. My son is not, you know, a pinup girl. He comes in his little, like, you know, bow tie and his suspenders, and he looks all dapper. He comes in and he meets the vet. I just don't understand this, you know, oh, we think Pinups for Vets is like this, so we're not going to allow a visit. I would say, you know, open your hearts, do some research, because it's not what you think it is. It's an amazing organization. I'm very proud to be an ambassador for.
It is an amazing organization. I agree. And how long have you been with them?
I've been with them since 2014. So, you know, I've gone out of state for visits. I've done, you know, multiple interviews on news stations. I've met with thousands of veterans. I've, you know, you name it, I've done it with the organization. And there's a reason why I give so much of my time to it. It's because it is absolutely meaningful work that makes a difference.
That's beautiful. So you are Miss November?
Yes. So the first year I did the calendar was I was Miss February. And then every November, Gina has some of the volunteers who are very active during the year, because November is, you know, Veterans Day. Mm-hmm. So for November, she has a group veteran shot. So I think I've been in the last 4 or 5 calendars in the group shot in November. And that's always fun because when we go in and we meet with the veterans, sometimes they'll say, well, who's this in the calendar? They don't realize it's female veterans in the calendar. So once they realize, it's like, oh, okay, hey, do you want to sign this? Do you want to, you know, and of course, you know, we'll sign it. We'll make it out to them, whatever they want. But that's just a little fun sort of thing when they realize that the people in the room are actually on the calendar that we're giving out to them.
It must be so exciting. Yeah. And for them to be like, wow. And then get to be in your presence.
And we take pictures with them, you know, hugs, smiles, pictures. It's funny because sometimes Gina says, were you at that event? Because I'm never with them where the camera is. Sometimes I'm involved in a conversation that's 20, 25 minutes because to me, it's about the quality of the interaction. And that's so important. So I actually have to log my visits because sometimes there'll be like one picture or no pictures because I'm off, I'm off like sharing stories with somebody and I'm not cognizant of what's going on. And the photos are important because you get the photos and the family members see, you know, our loved one had someone who cared, who came in. And we met with a man, I believe it was in Ventura, when he goes, come in my room. We went in his room and he had a picture of us, the three of us. It was me, Gina, and another pinup and him from 4 years earlier, from a visit 4 years earlier.
Oh,
and I could tell because my hair was really short and I was wearing a wig at that point because it was in a pixie. So mm-hmm. I just thought this man has waited for us to come back and had this picture up for 4 years.
That is incredible.
I loved it. I loved it. And I was so happy to see him again.
Oh, that is so sweet. I love that so much. You guys yes. just put so much good out into the universe, into the world. And that is so special to me. I love Gina for that. And I love you for what you're doing and how much you represent.
You.
For the veteran community.
And it comes back to us. All the good comes back to us because I feel wonderful when I get to spend the day with vets.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely. I know how I feel when I get to hang out with a veteran sister.
Right?
Like we're doing now, just chit-chatting yes. and talking stories. It is like my favorite. I'm like high for the rest of the day. It's the best yep. natural high.
Yes.
So, okay. So I know that your time is precious and we have hung out for a while. So we're going to wrap it up soon.
Okay.
But I have one more question for you before we do. And that is, well, actually two.
Okay.
First, tell us where we can find you and what's coming for you and how we can follow along on your journey.
Oh, great. Okay. I love this because I love meeting people on social media. I love talking to people on social media. So I know some people just do it because they want numbers or something, mm-hmm. but I like connecting with people, especially veterans, especially female veterans. So you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Jen13, and that's JENN13. You can find me at Facebook, facebook.com/actress Jennifer Marshall. And you can find all of the episodes of the first season of my show, Mysteries Decoded, on the CW app, or you can go to CWSEED.com. And that show is, in real life, I'm a licensed private investigator. We tackle historical mysteries. So they pair me up with an expert in the field and we look at what's in Area 51, what's going on in the Bermuda Triangle, is Bigfoot real, who killed Lizzie Borden's parents. It's really interesting stuff. So if you guys didn't catch it, it's all available on CW Seed right now.
And I'm going to say that my favorite episode is the Salem Witch one. First of all, that show is right up my alley.
Yeah.
And I just realized I lied to you. I said I was only going to ask you one more question. But but you mentioned that you're a private investigator. And I'm
yes.
like, what? How did that happen?
It happened because when I moved out to LA, I moved out to actually be a cop and not an actor. I wanted to be a detective. I wanted to work in major crimes unit, sex crimes. And I ended up going through the academy and I got hurt. And so I left and I thought, well, I still want to do this. What should I do? So I went to PI school. So over the last few years, since 2014, I've been acquiring my hours and it's a really long process. It requires 6,000 hours in the state of California. Yes. That's because they don't want paparazzi becoming private investigators and
Makes
looking
sense.
Up like Johnny Depp's address or
oh
something. So invasive. Yeah, very invasive. So that is what I do. And I love doing it because again, I can help people. I can find birth parents for people who were put up for adoption. There's lots of different things you can do as a PI that's helpful instead of just kind of drama. And I try to stick with the helpful side of it. But the great part is my show, I would never be hired, like, who murdered Lizzie Borden's parents? Nobody would ever hire me and pay for me to go to Fall River, Massachusetts. So it's a really unique opportunity to get to fly all over the country and investigate things that no PI would ever be paid for. But since it's a show, they pay for the investigative costs for me to fly out there for the shoot dates. And it's been fun. It's been really interesting.
Well, I think it's super, super cool. And I love to see your face because it's beautiful.
And you are so beautiful too. Oh,
thank you. Doing like good work in your career and amazing work as a human being and giving back to humanity and the veteran community. So I am beyond honored that you came and paid me a visit to hang out and talk on the Female Veterans Podcast. And my very last question for you is, what advice do you have for our veteran sisters that might help them thrive in life?
Oh gosh. So I would say if you have not gone to college, if you're sitting on your GI Bill, sometimes we get too caught up in, oh, well, what do we want to do when we get out? Maybe we should major in that. 2/3 of people have a degree and they have a job that does not correspond to the degree that they hold. Go to school, use that benefit, whether it's tech school or college. And don't underestimate yourself. I think we're so, you know, we put limitations on ourselves and the civilian world looks at us and says, wow, you guys have tackled so much. So just know your own worth and don't be afraid to ask for help. There's people, they want to get into acting who are veterans who contact me all the time and they say, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't want to bother you. And I'm like, bother me. I'm here to help you. I will absolutely make a half an hour, you know, or an hour for you so we can go over things. If I'm able to help, I will. So, you know, reach out to a mentor. Know that I think as women, especially vets, we're always like, oh, we don't want to bother somebody or is it okay? No, 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 no. You are worthy. You're worthy of someone else's time. Just put yourself out there and ask for what you've earned. What's the worst somebody can say? No. Okay. Well, if somebody says no, that doesn't necessarily mean no. It means not right now. It means maybe later. It means I'm busy. I'm slammed. Ask someone else. But I think as women, we tiptoe around and we kind of see ourselves as, oh, we don't want to bother people. Ladies, get rid of that. Get rid of that. You're never a bother. You are a woman who has served this country and you are worth so much. Know your own worth and go after that.
Amen, sister.
Amen.
Okay. My business mentor tells me something very similar to that all the time. And it really transformed my life. So I vibe with that advice so much. She says, if you don't ask, you don't get. And that,
amen.
And yes. That transformed my perspective. And the part about knowing your worth, I mean, that is truly where it all begins. Because if you don't begin to love yourself and see your own value, then no one else will. It all starts with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you want people, sometimes there is a little fake it till you make it. If you want people to see you as whatever, I mean, when I came to Hollywood, I portrayed myself as how I wanted to be treated. And, you know, people will do that. But if, you know, if you're mousy about stuff, you know, not much happens. Just be bold, be brash, be you, be beautiful.
I love that so much. And you know what else? I love you so much, Jennifer Marshall.
I love you too. Thank you for having me. I'm so honored. Cool.
You're so amazing. And just like who you are as a person, aside of what you do,
you're
really cool. I'm just from the bottom of my heart, I think you're awesome.
Well, I'm just so honored to be able to come on and hopefully, you know, if I can inspire a female vet to chase her dream or realize that she's worth more than what she thinks she's worth right now, that's a very, very wise investment of my time. And I'm just so happy to be able to talk to you finally. We've been trying to do this for a long time.
Yes, yes. And here we are and we've done it.
Yes.
And I want to thank you so, so very much.
Of course. Thank you so much for your time.
And with that, I am going to wrap this up. This has been the season 2 finale of the Female Veterans Podcast. As always, thank you so much for coming on this journey with me. I appreciate you so, so much. I love you guys, and I will talk to you next time.